Okay. So my name is Vita, and I am a compulsive overeater, anorexic, and bulimic.
Hi, Vita.
Thank you, Bronte, for asking me to come share with you guys. I think the last time I was at Kitchen Sink was like the last time I led it when it was at the synagogue way back, pre-pandemic. And it's great to be here, and thank you for everyone's service here. Welcome to our newcomer. I'm so glad you're here. I have been in OA in May. It will be 10 years. I came in when I was 23. Thank you. For me, that deserves like applause for myself, because I couldn't stick to anything in life before I came to this program. And I have been here for almost 10 years now, and I have never stopped coming. There have been periods of more meetings and fewer meetings, but I have never stopped coming. And in January, I had 8 years of abstinence from my bottom line, which is no throwing up, no intentionally starving myself, and not having the 5-10,000 calorie binges that I had every single day at my bottom. And the fact that like I have been able to not do those things for over 8 years is such a miracle, because that was the only way that I knew how to live life, was to do those things like in and more things like in combination, to deal with the fact that like I just had no idea how to be a human. And honestly, I still have no idea how to be a human. But the difference is that like that doesn't stop me from showing up for life today, and I don't have to cope with feeling like I don't know how to be a human by like destroying myself. And for me, like my eating disorder took me to not wanting to live by the time I was like 24 years old. I hit my bottom in this program. And for me, I think that was probably the, maybe not the first, but like in terms of my OA journey, really the first evidence of a higher power working for me in my life. Because when my eating disorder made me not want to live anymore, I was already in the room. So I had some hope. And if I hadn't had hope when that happened, I don't know if I would still be here. Like, this disease is so cunning, baffling, powerful, and I feel both fortunate that I was able to come to the rooms and like get into recovery at a relatively young age, and like the pain of getting to that point when you're that young is pretty hard. But it enabled me to start seeking a spiritual solution to my problems of living pretty young. And that has been such a gift. You know, when I came in here at 23, I was almost 24. I came because I was going to fail out of college again for the, I don't know how many time, like, third, fourth, fifth, I don't know, more than three, four, five more, I don't know. And part of why, obviously that's a problem, but part of why that experience was so excruciating for me is because, like, pre my eating disorder and other addictions developing, I was on track to be the valedictorian of my high school, and that also didn't happen because of my eating disorder and addictions, but, I just couldn't cope with life. And so continuing to fail out of college, that time was going to be from a community college here. I'm from Los Angeles. After having failed out of my prestigious university on the East Coast twice already, was so humbling, especially because I grew up feeling so insecure in myself that my identity was very much wrapped up in my academic achievement. And so when I couldn't live up to that anymore, I didn't have any sense of self really beyond that, except whatever sense of self I gained from whatever man I was involved with. And it just was so painful to be like, the only reason that I'm existing in my eyes is to like achieve, and now I can't do that because like I can't stop binging, throwing up, like whatever I was doing. And when I came in, my sponsor told me that my abstinence should be no binging and no purging. And at the time, I had no awareness that I was a restrictor and like starving myself. I genuinely thought when I was doing those things, I was doing well. And I also didn't think that bulimia should be part of my abstinence because I just didn't see it as a problem. I saw it as my solution to when I ate too much. And the problem was my perception was so warped that like eating too much could have been like an extra bite of broccoli meant I now had to throw up. And I only could see the things that made me gain weight as problematic, and I couldn't see anything else as a problem. Part of that was because most of my bulimia, like I wasn't really like a binge purge person. I was like a starve purge person. So I was either on like one side of the disease, or I was doing everything I could to be as thin as I could and eat as little as I could. And when I was doing those things, I was usually excelling in school. So in my eyes, I'm doing well. I'm showing up for life. I'm in a thin body. I'm excelling in school. And the problem was when I would start binge eating, now I'm failing out of school. So I really couldn't see that those things were problematic. Like that is the curious, you know, that mental twist that we have. Like that's what that was for me. I truly couldn't see it. And so my sponsor, you know, told me that I couldn't purge as part of abstinence, which sounds crazy saying it right now. It's like, why isn't purging part of my abstinence? But like, I would tell her I was abstinent if I wasn't binging, even if I was throwing up. And, you know, I had to have a lot of delusions smashed in order to get into recovery. That being like one of them. Another being that like, I had to learn to eat. Like, I just could not fathom being able to actually eat meals and be in a thin body, because the only way I'd ever been at a weight that I felt comfortable with was to starve myself and throw up and like exercise for 3 hours a day. And so even when I first got abstinent, I was in school for nutritional science, and that's what my degree is in. And I was like eating an egg for breakfast and thinking that like that's what I needed to do. And I remember just like saying to my dad, like the FDA recommendations on like calories are insane, you know what I mean? Like they don't know what they're talking about. Somehow I know what I'm talking about. Like it's just crazy, you know? And I was crazy, and I had no idea that I was crazy. I just knew that like I didn't know how to do life. And it's been a very slow journey of starting to feel like I do know what I'm doing. And like I said, I often still feel like I don't know what I'm doing. And so, you know, eventually I like, so basically kind of what happened in my recovery in the first few years was that I started learning more like how what I was doing wasn't working, like going to the gym 5 times a week, but being like, I can't go to 3 meetings a week, you know? And that I had to eat more and, seek a higher power. Like those things slowly started kind of coming in, but I am very defiant. I'm very stubborn. I really wanted to just like make OA work for me the way I wanted it to work for me, instead of just like taking sponsor direction. And, you know, like my first few sponsors were like very overweight, like 100 pounders, which is like not my experience. I mean, at my bottom, I probably was like 70 pounds heavier or something like that, but it wasn't my general experience. And I had another sponsor ask me like, why were those the people that like you were asking to sponsor you? They're, you know, and I think because it just felt safe to me. Like I didn't want to address the restrictive anorexic bulimic side of my disease. And but I, it also, you know, they weren't tough on me. And I did need someone to be tough on me in the beginning of my recovery. And I ended up getting a sponsor. I was going to school in Long Beach, and I ended up getting a sponsor who, you know, like, was also in AA and asked me to do a lot of stuff and, like, come up to Los Angeles every week to go to meetings. And I was annoyed. Like, I didn't want to do it, you know? I was like, who does she think she is to tell me I have to come to her meeting, da da da. And it's like, well, clearly what I was doing wasn't working, because the first 2 years I was in the program, I didn't stay abstinent. You know, I really, like I said, tried to make it work for me. And so finally, like, the walls around my heart, the walls around my soul, which were miles high, like, they started getting a little bit, like, less, you know, a little bit shorter, a little bit less thick. And I was like, okay, I'll just do it. You know, my therapist said to me, you don't have to do it forever. You know, you just do it for the next 6 months, which is usually the period that we have commitments at meetings. And I did it. And, like, it changed my life. You know, me being willing to do what someone else was asking me to do, instead of, like, we do say, like, take what you like and leave the rest. But, like, I was taking that to an extreme. You know, like, when you're like, I'm going to do OA my way. Like, no, that doesn't work. Especially when you're new, I think, my experience. And I, you know, this is just my experience, and everyone has a different experience. So if you don't relate to what I'm saying, like, you get to find your path. And that's what's so beautiful to me about this program, is that, like, each person gets to do that. You get to find the way that works for you. And that is such a gift, because it's not this mold that if you don't fit into, you're out of here, you know, like, sorry. You get to do it in a way that leads you to the freedom that you need, you know. I really do love the saying we have, that, like, my abstinence could kill me and you're up. My abstinence could kill me. That's not what I meant to say. your abstinence could kill me, and my abstinence could kill you. And all of those things are things that I learned here. And so when I really started, like, taking the direction of a sponsor, and I finally worked the steps, like, I had never gotten past step three, my life really started changing. And one of the things that happened early in my recovery was that I got really sick. And one of the ways that I had learned to cope with life in recovery was by being really busy and, like, being really active physically. And, you know, I mean, I think being physically active is great, but the way I was doing it probably wasn't sustainable, and the being really busy definitely wasn't sustainable. I just want to say, backtrack for a minute, that, like, when I first got abstinent, I'm also sober now, but, like, I smoked weed every night, and I needed that to be able to, like, stop binge eating. I know that for a lot of people, like, how can you smoke weed and, like, not binge eat? But I just would do it before bed, and, like, I didn't have the tools for me. Like, my disease is very deep in my mind, that to, like, just be able to let go of everything, you know? And I just say that to say that, like, if you have multiple problems, or even, like, multiple issues with your eating disorder, and you can't address every single one immediately, my experience is, like, that's okay. Address the things that are killing you, and, like, as you work a spiritual program, you could start addressing other behaviors as your coping skills in other areas get stronger, and your tools for dealing with life get stronger, and your spiritual connection gets stronger. Like, if I was talking with one of my sponsees yesterday that, like, is anorexic, bulimic, and was basically an anorexic bodybuilder. And they were like, if you had told me I had to give up bodybuilding when I came into this program, I would have been like, bye, and they never would have gotten recovery. And now they have recovery in that area, as well as many years, like, not being anorexic or bulimic, you know? And so it's like, for me, letting go of everything at once would not have worked, and that's okay. Like, whatever the path is in the rooms is okay. So yeah, when I got very ill, it was like, that to me was the next time that I really saw a higher power in my life, because at that point, like, I was abstinent, at least initially, and I was abstinent, and I had already started connecting with a higher power. And that part of the program was really hard for me. I didn't understand higher power. I was in a scientific background. I like needed to understand things to feel like I could deal with them. And for me, it's been like the educational variety. It's been very experiential what a higher power is. And when that happened, my coping skills of being very busy and being very active were no longer accessible to me. And again, like, thank God I was able to start leaning on this higher power. Like, how do I stay home alone, having like nothing to do for long periods of time, and food is not what I fill that time with? It started to become like a higher power, and that connection is what I got to start filling that time with. And that was such a gift for me. Like, I started to surrender at that time. And then also early in my recovery, and that was the last time I threw up and my abstinence date, my cousin drowned, like, very in a tragic accident. And after that time, like, that again was like a spiritual experience for me, to the extent of like, I really saw how I was the problem in my life, and that like I was the reason why I had problems. You know, it wasn't anyone else. It wasn't anything else. It was that like, I didn't know how to do things differently. And I just made this decision that like, I'm not going to be the problem anymore. I mean, I am still the problem, but like, I am not the problem in the way that I was. And that was another spiritual experience for me. And then like, after failing out of college so many times, I was able to graduate with straight A's, but not doing it because I was very ill. I was able to do it in like a non-perfectionistic way. Like, I had to show up to my exams not having studied for 11 hours and see that like, oh, actually, like, I can do well and not overdo everything. I didn't get A's on every single thing, you know, like, I got C's on some exams, but it's like, I still was able to get A's in my classes. And that was an important experience for me. That's something I still struggle with today, is like not doing things to the extent that I want to do them. And because of my illness, like, my life has looked a lot different than I thought it would. You know, first my addictions and then my physical health problems. It's been a very different experience of life than I thought was what I would be experiencing. And this program, and then picking up other programs along the way, has enabled me to start dealing with life on life's terms. Like, if I had gotten sick like that and I didn't have recovery and I didn't have connection to a higher power, it wouldn't have been possible for me. I would have like added to the problem versus like being part of the solution in that way. You know, and like, when you stay in these rooms, you go through life stuff. I think a lot of my experience prior to recovery was trying to be an avoidance of the big things in life. You know, like, I've had relationships end and start in this program. Like, I got to graduate college. I have been able to like travel internationally and stay abstinent, just travel at all and stay abstinent, you know. But I've like, in the last year alone, thank you, it's 5 minutes. In the last year alone, like, I moved across the city, which is basically like moving to a different city. It is. You know, like, I lived on my own for the first time for an extended period. I was in a new relationship. I moved in with my partner. I like changed careers, still in that process. My health started changing for the first time. Like, a lot of other things, like big life things, started changing, and I got to still show up for them. And recently, it's hard to talk for me to talk about, but like, I've gotten to start really showing very, very recently, start showing up very differently for my relationship with my parents, to the extent that I have older parents. I am 33 and my dad is 84. And my mom is 75, and my parents live in a three-story home. And my father is in a lot of denial about what that should look like. And if, like, when when I was in my disease, both of my pre-OA, like both of my parents had cancer and I couldn't show up at all. And last weekend, a week ago, I was able to like have a conversation with them about, you know, like me being a young adult, really trying to like create a foundation for my life and also wanting to be able to show up for them as they are in this transitional part of their lives and like what I need to be able to do that from them. And, you know, my dad's response was like, I appreciate that you're concerned. And that was it, you know, and it was better than it could have been of like outright denial. But, the amazing part for me is like, I can accept that that was his response and I didn't fight him on it. And I still get to continue to take action and show up despite that. And there's just a lot of growing up that I'm having to do in that area at a younger age than a lot of people experience. And like, I am graced with a sponsor who like, her father died of Alzheimer's. My father doesn't have anything like that, but like sponsors who have experience, strength, and hope that can help me in this area of life where like I have no idea what I'm doing, but I know I want to do something. And then my mom like telling me she is so proud of me for taking initiative and like showing up for the family in this way because she can't do it on her own. And that is such a gift to be able to show up in that way for my family. Like, this program has enabled me to show up and think about people besides myself. You know, like, I am in a functional relationship today because I can do that. I can think about other people's needs as well as my own and know that, like, I do have to put myself first in terms of taking care of myself. Like, I can't give from an empty cup. But I also like don't get to be selfish, and it's not the world according to Vita, which prior to recovery, it was in my mind definitely the world according to Vita, and I just felt like a victim of everything. And I don't really feel like a victim for long periods anymore. Like maybe short periods, there's some victim in there, but like I know it's not real, and I think that's a huge difference that I've experienced as well, is that like I may like have my feelings and my thoughts, but I can know that they're not real. Just because they're happening doesn't mean that they're real. I guess the last thing that I want to address is that I basically was like toying with anorexia in recovery for many years, unintentionally. And I was put on a very restrictive food plan because of my health issues. I became very underweight, and because I didn't try and lose weight, I was in so much denial around it, despite my sponsor saying, like, you're very thin, your food seems light. Like, I felt okay. It felt very different than starving myself pre-recovery. And as my health started improving, I started feeling starving all the time. And last year, I went through a very difficult journey of basically, like, relearning how to eat. And, like, almost 10 years into program, which was very humbling, and I gained a lot of weight, which like my anorexia hates. And today the difference is like, one, I just kept showing up through that. Like I always thought if I started struggling in, thank you, all right, but if I started struggling in program, like I wouldn't be able to show up anymore. And instead it was like, I got to be humble. I got to go through pain with my eating disorder, like keep showing up. And like, I don't get to call out fat anymore. I don't get to say like, because I don't like the way my body is, like, I'm just not going to show up for life. I'm not going to do it. Like, that's not an option today. And that is a miracle for me, because like that would have been my only option prior. So I'm just so grateful for the life that OA has afforded me, and I owe it to you guys. Thank you. There is no break at this meeting. We will now pass the basket for our seventh tradition. A donation of $3 is suggested, but any amount would be greatly appreciated. May I have a volunteer to read the 12 traditions? Please be quiet while we are reading the traditions. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Jennifer.
Hi, Jennifer.
What our common welfare should come first, personal recovery depends on OA unity. Two, four group purpose serves for one ultimate authority. A loving God is who may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. Three, the only requirement for OA membership is the desire to stop eating compulsively. Four, each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. Five, each group has the one primary purpose, to carry the message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. Six, an OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. Seven, every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. Eight, Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. Nine, OA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10, OA has no opinion on outside issues, hence the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need to always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media communication. 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities.
Do you guys have Venmo? No. Okay.
Okay.
No problem.
I have it if you
want to. Okay. This is the time for questions only. There's no sharing at this meeting. If you need to share, please do so with any one of us after the meeting. Also, please remember that the opinions of the leaders are my own and not of Overeaters Anonymous as a whole. When asking questions, you need not identify yourself. Please remember, if asking a question, your voice may be audible on the OA podcast. Okay. Does anyone have a question? Go ahead. Yes.
Hi, Peter.
Hi.
Maybe I missed it, but could you talk about your childhood and what led up to all of this?
Yeah. So the question was, can I talk about my childhood and what led up to everything? Yeah, I didn't really talk about my childhood. Sometimes I do, sometimes I don't. I guess, like, you know, it's been kind of, like, interesting for me to explore that because, you know, I had, like, a relatively happy upbringing, and I think, like, one thing that really happened for me that made me just, well, one, I came out, like, obsessed with food. Like, my first memories are food, so that was just always there. But, and then, you know, I went through puberty relatively early also and became very uncomfortable in my body very young, and really growing up in Los Angeles especially, thought that, like, that is what would make me happy. So that became a focus very young as well. And seeing, like, the women that got attention were very thin, and if I felt like validation needed to come from performance and men, and that, like, I needed to be thin for that to happen. And, but I think also really for me is that I felt, like, very safe and loved with my mother. And then when I was outside of the home, I didn't feel that way. And then as I struggled pretty early on, like, I was very depressed by the time I was maybe, like, 5, 6, 7 years old. I started having acting out behavior, and my parents are also both therapists, and so my mom, like, would try and kind of mediate the problems versus, like, every other parent I saw always took their child's side, and my mom would try and be more balanced around things, and so I basically felt like no one was on my side and I was alone. And so I think I felt very, very confused by the world, like, coming into the world and feeling very happy and safe and joyful, and then finding that, like, the external world didn't feel that way, and having no idea how to cope with that. And so I think because I already had those ideas around body and happiness and also, like, obsession with food, And that just became how I learned how to cope very young.
Thanks. You said that your program started to kick in after you got through the third step. So what was your experience and what did you learn about yourself going through the fourth step process?
So the question was that I said my experience started to really change after the third step. And so what was my experience in the fourth step? Well, I think part of it was just like I always stopped after step three. Like I did step one through three a number of times with different sponsors. So I think that was part of it, was just like actually going all the way through. It was a very different experience than stopping at three. And I think I probably didn't have the humility that I needed in a lot of ways to look at the fourth step initially. And what I really saw in my first fourth step was that like I was very judgmental and had a lot of expectations on the world that like when they weren't fulfilled, I think I felt justified in behaving however I felt like I needed to or wanted to behave. And, you know, so like a lot of victimization. And I, even like through that fourth step, I continued to feel like a victim, but I started having different awareness around it. And, you know, like another part of my fourth step was just seeing like I had been hurt a lot, but I had put myself in positions to be hurt a lot. And that was something that I needed to change. Like I needed to do the work, the inner work, so that I knew when I was putting myself in a position to be hurt, so I couldn't feel like a victim anymore, because that's my part in those things, is like I keep putting myself in a position to be hurt and having expecting people to be able to show up for me in ways that they can't show up for themselves. So like that's not a realistic expectation. And then when that doesn't happen, feeling like they did me wrong versus like, why would I expect that of them? So, yeah. And another thing that really became clear for me in my four steps was like, I had no idea how to have healthy relationships, which is not uncommon in people in these rooms. And like, for me, I needed to go to other programs to get help in those areas. And that is the only reason that I have the relationship that I have today, that I have the relationship with my family that I have today. Like those are miracles of recovery, because like there is no way I would have figured that out on my own. And I would have kept creating wreckage. Like even in recovery before I went to people programs, like I moved out of my parents' house and then I wanted to like move back in with them while I was looking for another place to live. And my mom was like, well, I don't know, Vita, like, are you going to be able to be nice to me? Because it's kind of been nice not having you around. So, like, that was me in early recovery, like, still running my mouth. And I still do, but it's different. Yeah. Go ahead.
Thank you so much for being here. Can you tell me a little bit about how you navigated navigating the transition of dealing with your parents, you know, becoming more childlike, if you will, where you're kind of taking care of them, and how do you take care of yourself in that scenario?
So the question is, like, how am I navigating the transition with my parents and taking on more responsibility and them, you know, being able to do less and still taking care of myself? I mean, it's very new. Like, this started happening in the last month that I really started addressing this. But, I mean, a lot of it, honestly, is, like, I have to talk to other people who have this experience. And like I said, I've been blessed with, like, sponsors in multiple programs who have this type of experience. And, I mean, a lot of it, honestly, is, like, my people program showing up, my recovery there showing up for me, that has enabled me to kind of show up differently in this way. But, like, I think part of it, too, is like, I have to allow myself to, like, I've been crying so much, and to have the feelings, and I'm also having to learn how to, like, still feel, like, floored by grief and still show up for my life. Which is, like, in the past when I've had deep griefs, like when my cousin drowned and whatnot, like, I just felt like I couldn't keep showing up. And I did, but, like, so imperfectly. And some of it is just, like, giving myself some grace to, like, not show up perfectly and, like, to be messy. And I have to, like, talk to the people around me about what I'm going through and just say, like, I'm so sensitive right now. Like, I just can't handle a lot. Like, my boyfriend and I joke around a lot, and, like, we have to make a point with each other of like saying like, hey, I'm like really sensitive right now. Like I really need some tenderness. And like, those are things that prior, like even early in recovery, like I didn't have that verbiage. Like I couldn't communicate in that way. And with my family, it's like, it's a lot of just next indicated action, you know? Yesterday, my mom and I talked with like a coach who helps families through this type of transition. And she's like, you guys have a conundrum. Like, it's not easy to deal with like a stubborn old man. And like, thank God I'm in people programs, because it's like, I feel like that's a lot with like dealing with an alcoholic. It just doesn't make sense, his thinking. And like, because of the work that I've done, that I just get to have so much compassion for his experience. It's like, I'm not attacking him. Like, I'm trying to find a solution that works for everyone. And I really get to talk to them from a place of like what I need and what my hopes and desires are for this experience and transition, versus like making ultimatums and demands and just coming in like a bull in a china shop, you know, like that doesn't get people to participate. You know, like the concepts say participation is key to harmony. Mm-hmm. And like, I have to give other people an opportunity to participate if I want there to be an opportunity for like the common welfare to be supported, which is tradition one. And those are like, I did not come out like thinking like that. I didn't, you know, like those are not my ideas. Those are the principles behind the steps, the traditions, the concepts. Like that's what I got to learn in the rooms, and like through the experience of other people. You know, I'm not making up the script on my own. So,
and thank you for your share. You mentioned struggling, finding a higher power, and then getting one. What were the steps you did to find that higher power? And has it been the same consistent throughout, or has it changed since?
Yeah. So the question was, like I mentioned, struggling to find a higher power, and then how did I find that, and has it been consistent, or has it changed throughout the time I was here? I mean, part of it was I just had to keep showing up and I had to keep doing the work to start finding a higher power. Like in the beginning, it was a lot of just like very small, like prayer and meditation, you know, just like serenity prayer, reading for today, doing like 3-5 minutes of meditation. And then I think because of some of the experiences I had early in recovery, like my cousin drowning and getting sick, well, I will say that before I came into program, like I had experience with meditation, and I had like taken meditation classes. I had experience of like feeling what I felt in meditation, which I didn't know at that point was connection to a higher power, but I got to start identifying once I was in the rooms that like that's what I was experiencing when I was meditating. And I think I also had a lot of spiritual experiences as a child that I didn't identify as that and were actually very confusing to me. And so I really like shut that part of my experience down also in childhood because I didn't understand and it was confusing. And again, like scientific, I also will say atheist background. And and so part of it was just continuing to show up and do the work and then like seeing things unfold in ways that like I couldn't have orchestrated that felt very like divine in nature. Is that 5 minutes? Thank you. And like, I was able to start identifying that. And then like literature, both in the rooms and like outside literature really, really helped me. You know, like the big book says that we should be reading outside spiritual literature. And that has been a big part of my spiritual development. I've taken like courses outside of program that are about spirituality, like meditation and different things like that, that have really helped me. And my experience, and definitely doing the steps. I mean, like that's 12 says, like having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps. Like that is the only thing that we are really promised, is if we do the steps, we will have a spiritual awakening. And so just letting that process unfold, and I've done the steps a number of times in a number of fellowships. And my experience and like connection with the higher power definitely has shifted over time. And there have been periods where I feel more connected and less connected. And, like last year when so much was changing and I started struggling in OA again, in a different way also, like I was struggling to feel connected to God, but I never stopped trying to connect with God. And now I feel differently and more connected to my higher power than I ever have. And part of that for me was calling people who I knew had struggled in recovery, but like stayed in the rooms and stayed in recovery, and asking them like what they did, you know. And one person told me that like they had adopted a two-way prayer practice, and I started doing that, and it really started changing things for me. Like, I had done letters to and from God, but this is a little different. Like, this practice is a little different than that. And it started making like the connection feel more tangible again, and like allowed me to get really kind of clear direction on a very regular basis that is not coming from me, because I would never have thought of the things that come from that type of work. So that's been transformative. And I've also started again leaning on like outside spiritual literature as well, and that is really, really helpful for me.
Thank you so much. I really resonated with a lot of what you said. As a newer person, what did you do around, you know, there's anorexia, bulimia, those kinds of behaviors are so secretive. How did you navigate that in the beginning with the world outside of this meeting?
So the question is, like, how did I navigate the anorexic bulimic behaviors in the beginning outside of the rooms?
Like, when you started to change your behaviors, how did you tell people? Did you keep it, you know, there's this
Yeah.
urge to keep everything so.
I mean, like, I don't know that I can give that much insight into that. For me, like, the compulsive eating side of my disease, I feel like was always kind of stronger, and I was trying to use those other parts as like a way to deal with my compulsive eating. And very early in recovery, like, I just lost the ability to starve myself. I just couldn't do it anymore. Like, I wanted to, but I just physically lost the ability. And then like bulimia was kind of just lifted from me, because I started throwing up blood when I was throwing up, and it like scared me enough that I stopped. And I also know like that was grace, because I have had sponsees who are in danger of having a heart attack because of their electrolytes due to bulimia, and they don't stop, you know? So, yeah, like for me, the overeating was secretive. Like, I didn't do it in front of other people. I was binging on like 10,000 calories alone, you know? And I also have just always been very open about being in OA. And once I got into recovery, like telling people that I was in recovery from an eating disorder, that I was in Overeaters Anonymous. So I don't really have the experience of like being secretive around those things. I will say, like, last year when I started recognizing how I'd been like restricting and like dabbling with anorexia in recovery, I had so much shame around it. And like, it was hard to show up and share and be honest around those things. And I did with my sponsor, and I didn't tell like a lot of people for a while that was happening. So I don't know if that really answers your question, but yeah, that's it. Thank you.